Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 106 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast.
In this episode, I get a chance to talk to Sheldon Mason from Mason Barbecue. This was recorded in late November, but I haven't had a chance. A number of things have happened, so I haven't had a chance to edit it up. It's a long one. It's an hour, but it is jam-packed, and you're going to love every minute of listening to Sheldon and his stories. His passions are similar to my passions. His passions are music, coffee, cast iron, and barbecue. He was born in Texas. He joined the Air Force station in Montana. That's why he's based in Montana, working on the Minuteman III missile. But we get into the barbecue culture of Montana. We talk about burn barrels. We talk about what kind of sparked his barbecue kind of business journey, which he took the 17th Street business and barbecue class in Murfreesboro, Illinois. And if you haven't heard about it, check it out. I've done some stories with Amy Mills there, which are really interesting to learn about what those classes are. They're really special classes. The one that he was at had Sam Jones, Pat Martin, Wayne Mueller, Adam Perry Lang, John Lewis, amazing people, brush shoulders with them, hang out with them. So that kind of sparked his friendship path in the business of barbecue. He knows how to weld. He designs his own pits. He developed a friendship with Esaul when he was in the early days at 2M Smokehouse, as well as Evan Leroy from Leroy Lewis when he was first starting out. Then we talk about his relationship with Arnis Robbins from Evie Mays Barbecue. We talk about brisket class at Texas A&M. As you know, we're all over the place, but we get a chance to really talk about a lot of different topics within the barbecue world. And then he discusses his trips out to Los Angeles. We talk in depth about Howlin' Rays, Nashville Hot Chicken, which is, if you haven't been, you have to go. And especially after listening to the two of us talk about that, you'll want to go. And Moose Craft Barbecue, how he came out to visit and saw Andrew and Michelle. And then that's how Howlin' Rays gets tied in. And then Slab Barbecue and Trudy's Underground Barbecue with Bert. We talk about that. He's going to be retiring this June 2019, moving back to Texas. And he'll be working at a number of different places. You'll see him popping up all over Texas. This is a really good, really interesting interview. I know you're going to love it. If you're digging these, please subscribe. That way you don't miss out. But enjoy this. I want to know kind of like what your thoughts are on like the barbecue world now and how things have changed, because it's changed a lot even the last 5 years or 4 years.
Oh, most definitely. There's a lot of things growing. Yeah. A lot of people getting into it. And there's a lot of people getting into it, but there's not a lot of people doing it maybe the right way. True. But I think some people are just kind of what I call Pop-Tarts. They get in and they get out. So I'm hoping, we find that more people are going to get into it because they're passionate about it and kind of put that love, because those people are going to get picked out really quickly if they don't show the kind of love that it deserves, really.
Yeah. I think you'll see a lot of people that are doing it just for money, that just think like this is the next trend, almost like the poke things or the whatever, like, you know, or like a yogurt shop. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I hate it because sometimes people get into things for the wrong reasons, and barbecue isn't one of those, at least in my opinion, because there's so much hard work and it's such an art and a craft that goes into it. It's really hard to get into something like this and then just kind of walk away. But then you get people that buy into it and they find the right people, and then sometimes they can buy the names to get into it, or they get kind of a little small toehold on it for a little bit, and then they find something else. It's, I don't know. Uh-huh. It's one, you know what I mean? It's,
for sure.
It's business sometimes for some people, as opposed to the people that are very passionate about it.
Well, and you probably we've seen it even back, you know, 5, 10, even 15 years ago when a lot of the chains popped up, and the ones, there's certain Texas barbecue chains that have covered the country, when we know that they're, you know, the quality isn't there, but for some people, this is their only view of Texas barbecue, which is kind of sad.
Oh, for sure. I had a buddy of mine that lived in San Antonio for a while, and he was stationed there at Lackland, and I didn't get to see him for about a year, and I went up to visit him, and I've been telling him the whole time. I said, bro, you got to get out. You don't realize where you're at. You're in the Mecca, and this is as Aaron and everybody were getting kind of that momentum, and I said, you have to go and try some of this other stuff, and he only had Rudy's. And then finally, I took him and another buddy of mine. I took him on their first barbecue crawl, and it blew their minds. And then after that, they just never have been the same when it comes to barbecue. Now they've become sort of I wouldn't say snobs, but on the other hand, they know how to pick out the good as opposed to the just kind of mediocre stuff.
Exactly. And I've had friends that have traveled to Austin for South by Southwest, and they've come back to me and they've said, I've tried these three places, and a part of me inside of it, like, it hurts because I know that there's really good barbecue, and they've gone to just a couple chains and maybe a place that's just a touristy place that I'm not going to name names because it's not nice, but you know, who am I to say that they, like, this is better than California barbecue than well, at least it was 10 years ago. California barbecue is starting to get elevated. But yeah, I try not to look down on anybody's choice of barbecue. But once people have something really good, it's just like almost anything. Once you have really good food, you realize, wait a second, there's something different.
Oh, yeah. You can always pick out. There's something really unique about what I'm experiencing. You can tell that people put a little bit extra into this, or they take a little bit of extra time, or whatever it may be, the meat selection or whatever it might be. You can tell that somebody's put a little bit more extra time into it.
Without a doubt. Well, we've kind of just kind of started. So I think people will be interested just in that little part of this discussion. Your shirt, what's your shirt from?
This is actually an Ames Brothers shirt. A lot of people that know I'm huge into music. Music and coffee and cast iron and barbecue have always been kind of like my components, I guess, that kind of make me up. And so this shirt, the kind of the backstory about Ames Brothers is Jeff Ament is the bass player from Pearl Jam, and they're my all-time. I've been traveling around since the 90s seeing these guys, and so I just hit 101 shows this year.
That congratulations. I that's awesome. That's really cool.
So it's kind of one of those things. I'd been with him since the beginning, so I kind of wanted to see it through. And it's cool because when I moved to this part of the country, Jeff's from Montana. He's from Big Sandy, which is about 45 minutes from here. Well, anyway, to get to the point about the shirt is his brother owns this shirt company, and it's called Ames Brothers. It's kind of a spinoff of his last name, but they have they do a lot of merchandise and artwork for the bands. They do a lot of the posters. They're really great artists, but they have these really cool shirts that they do that aren't just, you know, run-of-the-mill type shirts. And so I've got a huge collection of those, and it's kind of they're kind of neat.
I know what I'm going to be doing that right. Is it A-A-A-I-M-E-S or A-M-E-S?
No, A-M-E-S-B-R-O-S.
Okay.
Yeah, they have some really cool stuff. They make some really, really awesome shirts are kind of my big thing, but they make a few other things, but their artwork is just phenomenal. So they do a lot of really cool, interesting things. So it's kind of been something I've been on since they started.
Do you have some of the old Pearl Jam, like concert posters, the paintings and stuff? Do you have any of those?
Oh, absolutely. I have a huge collection of that stuff. I've got some of them up, some of them I don't. I have so many that I need to get framed. So I'm kind of behind on getting those. And, I don't know. One day I'll get them all up when I get settled because I'm only here for about another year and then I'm moving. So I'm probably my final place. I'll probably get that set up, everything set up anyway.
Well, let's talk about your background. Where are you from?
So I was originally born in Pasadena, Texas, which everybody kind of knows it's from the Houston area. My father was in the construction business and he was out there during the big boom for the oil and so forth. And so we only lived there for just a short amount of time. Then we moved back to the Gulf Coast where I grew up in a little community in between Pensacola, Florida, and Mobile, Alabama, actually. And so I grew up there until I joined the Air Force in probably 1999. Okay. And I've been in Montana since then, since 1999, actually.
So were you stationed in Montana? Is there somewhere that you were stationed?
Yeah, so I've been in Great Falls, Montana my entire career, which is kind of weird. I work on Minuteman III. They're the big missiles that everybody hears about. Maybe some people know about them, some people don't. There's a lot of people that really don't know we even have missiles in the ground.
they probably were born in the late 90s or early 2000s, right? Most people
just don't know. They just really don't keep an eye on what's going on in the world, and maybe that's a good thing. Sometimes it's good to turn a blind eye, but then a lot of people have no idea what actually is going on sometimes. But yeah, I've been here since then. Well, since the end of 99. So next year I plan on relocating. So it's kind of cool that I got to stay here because obviously we don't work on missiles in every state. So there's only just a few states that have them. And so it's either here or Wyoming or North Dakota. So this to me was the best choice out of the three states.
Well, could you talk about what you do for it? Like, are you down deep down in like a big like a silo thing? Or I don't even know the term. Yeah. I don't even the proper term.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you actually know the nomenclature. It's we work down underground and So yeah, we go out and we actually do all the maintenance on those missiles, okay. Take them apart, put them together, and stuff like that.
Are they massive? Or are they? Can you put armor on?
Yeah, they're really really big. I don't really know how to explain how big they actually are without going into too many details, but
you can't put your arms around them. They're bigger than.
Oh, absolutely not. No, they're bigger than that.
It's not like something like this. Like you can carry.
No. It's way bigger than that. They're pretty massive. So it's kind of a cool job, but it's like everything else.
It's a job,
you
right?
You go in and do your job every day, and you try to do it to the best of your ability. At least that's what I try to do. You know, some people may get a little complacent, I guess, but you know, that kind of comes with every job, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, no, without a doubt, and it's hard. At least for me, it's hard to stick to like the enthusiasm to a certain type of job, because after a while, it becomes just a monotonous thing. If it's something, that's why barbecue is always. I've always come back to barbecue. I've always been passionate. It's just something. When you get that bug, I think with barbecue, at least I'm sure. And then when did you get? Did you grow up cooking? Is that something your family?
Yeah. So my grandmother was a professional chef, and she cooked in a lot of different kitchens. So I kind of grew up watching her cook, and that's where I don't do just barbecue. I cook a lot of other different things in a lot of different other ways. That was kind of one way. I learned a lot of things from her, baking and stuff like that. I don't really do a lot of baking, though. It's not really my thing. I enjoy it for certain things. But as far as barbecue is concerned, I had an uncle from Greenville, North Carolina. And as a little guy, I grew up around the burn barrels, and I kind of picked up the bug from that then. And I really didn't understand what I was doing when I was little. I would stay up with those guys for a while and watch them cook. Okay. And it was kind of cool. And I knew that I really enjoyed that type of thing. And so all through high school and stuff, I was really kind of just doing different types of barbecue and grilling. Grilling was kind of the thing that really got me kicked off to jump into the barbecue scene. And so the North Carolina style, the vinegar-based stuff, that's kind of what I grew up with, because in the lower regions of Alabama, where I grew up in the Gulf Coast, everything's all pork-driven. There's not a whole lot of beef in that part of the country. So ribs, pork, and, you know, pulled pork sandwiches and so forth. That's what we grew up with, and it wasn't until I really got interested in what was going on in Texas. That's kind of what changed my whole viewpoint on barbecue.
Were there any specific barbecue joints when you were younger that you went to in Alabama or Mississippi or those
You know, there were a couple. They weren't anything spectacular. There was a place called Smokey's that was in Pensacola, Florida. I kind of worked on and off at a radio station there in the 90s, and they were right next door, so it was really convenient to go over there and get stuff. And they would give us leftovers when I would work over there in the evening sometimes. And so it was okay, but then at that point, nobody was really doing anything really outstanding. It was kind of just like, you know, the Dunkin' Donuts guy. Like, we're just going to make the donuts this morning, and, you know, we're just going to put food out for people.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything spectacular. The sauces are very sweet. It's Alabama barbecues on a really different scale. You know, the guys down at Big Bob Gibson's, they're doing some really cool stuff, because everybody always asks me about the white sauce, and I always tell them that's a northern Alabama thing.
Without we didn't see
that. Where I was growing up at, but I've had it, and it's definitely cool for certain things. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, you had mentioned, I want to go back, you mentioned burn barrels. A lot of people across the country wouldn't even know what a burn barrel was. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah. So the ones that we had were your typical burn barrel. It was just a 55 gallon drum with some holes drilled in it and a couple of pieces of rebar stuck in there. And you would just burn your, you throw your whole logs in there and burn the coals down and then shovel the coals.
Out the bottom, so, right?
At the bottom, yeah. And so they've gotten really creative. I've kind of created a really cool one that I'm going to be using here, you know, in the next few months. They get better and better as, you know, progress. It's simple, very simple. But on the other hand, you make it convenient out of, you know, just kind of trial and error. But the ones we had back then, we had like a decommissioned. It was a propane tank cooker, and it was huge that my uncle used. And it took three people to open the lid on that thing, but you would shovel the coals in there. For the people that don't really know how that type of hog cooking goes, because there's different types of hog cookers out, but traditionally that's how we do it, just like they did in North Carolina.
It's interesting, because I think the only time that, like for me, because I didn't really know what the term was, I had seen them, but I think burn barrels, I had heard from Making a Murder on Netflix. There was like, they kept talking about the burn barrel, that they had put somebody in a burn barrel. I'm like, what is I don't even know what that right. means. Like, do they have something to burn people?
Well, my grandparents also burned all their trash growing up in the part of Florida they lived in. They don't have, because they lived out in the country, so there's a lot of times where they don't have people to come pick up your refuse and so forth. They just had burn barrels, and then other things they had to take into, you know, there was like a dumping site that you could take things to. So a lot of the easier stuff, they would just, all the paper stuff and the goods, they would just burn that stuff in a burn barrel. So I just kind of grew up around those. So yeah. I kind of, you know, and a lot of people don't know that type of living because, you know, people from the city, every other places in the United States, that's kind of maybe not common practice. So.
And also, too, did they have a propane tank?
The one that we cooked on was a decommissioned propane tank for the hog cooker.
No, but in the ground, is that how they got, is that how people... Like how their home was, did they have a propane tank in the yard?
They did, but theirs was above ground.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't really know why the difference of having them maybe out of convenience, because here in Montana, sometimes they're buried underground and sometimes they're sitting above ground. So
I always thought because they freeze, but maybe it's not because
they do freeze here, but the ground doesn't freeze like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Where I'm at, it freezes 6 to 7 feet down here in Montana. Wow. So I could definitely see why people don't do it here, because my father has sort of a green thumb. And he was trying to give me some of these Seven Sisters roses one time, and the ground can only freeze maybe a foot and a half down. And I was going to bring them here because they're some of the most beautiful wild roses you've ever seen, but they wouldn't survive here. So that's one of the downsides about living here. You can't really have a lot of that cool stuff that I grew up with in the South.
So you need things like trees that have like long, like deep root beds and stuff, like things that.
Definitely. Most of the trees here are evergreen, and so we can get into that some other, you know, part of the conversation, because we don't have any, there's no wood here, so everything I bring it in from Texas or from the central coast of California, because I do a lot of Santa Maria-style cooking, too.
Well, let's jump to – so when you were in the Air Force, were you cooking – were you catering? Like, did you get a bug, like, I could do this, or is this – or were you cooking for friends, or how would that work?
So I kind of have done it all, to be honest with you. Most people that knew me first early on, I had always cooked. I would have things set up at my house. I would always grill. And then it wasn't until later on, probably about 2011-ish, I had gotten a little bit of a bigger cooker, and I was doing some bigger jobs, cooking, catering, doing some stuff on the base for people. And I would cook for our people all the time. And then I really got kind of crazy about it in 2013. I decided I was going to try to figure out how to build and do what I wanted to do. And so
– But did you try Texas-style barbecue somewhere?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. 2013, when I went back to Texas to visit one of my buddies that had left, that what I was talking about earlier, I went back and we had hit – we did a bunch of places in Austin. We obviously went to Franklin's and everywhere else, and it kind of – kind of set me on that path finally. I kind of decided that's what I wanted to do, because I love the offset style cooking, and I've cooked direct, and I do both, and I really love doing both. So I kind of said, you know what, I'm going to stick with the more Central Texas style type of cooking. And that's kind of how I got set with that style. It's probably that last trip I took in 2013 there was really what changed it all for me.
And is that kind of when Mason Barbecue even started, or did it even have a name? Was it just?
Yeah, it started out as Mace's Low and Slow Barbecue, but for some people it was really kind of weird off the tongue. So here, barbecue culture in Montana doesn't really exist. It's only here till recently. People have started doing stuff here. It's just really hard to source everything here, whether it be the beef or the wood, or you know, even just something as simple as, you know, really good spare ribs. It's very hard to get here.
Oh wow!
Because it gets shipped out of the state. All the great beef goes to Texas. So all of our prime grade stuff, it took me 2 years to really start sourcing prime grade briskets, which is crazy because most people here don't really care what grade it is. They just want food. They don't really care about all the other things that surround it. So I spent a little extra time trying to get the best product, because that's what they were doing there. And I said, it's really great that that's what they're doing, but I want to kind of follow and keep it kind of in that same pathway.
So at that time in 2013, were you starting to become friends with people in the barbecue business? Is that when you started to kind of, your barbecue friends grew? Or?
So I went to the classes over in Murfreesboro. I've been to all of those.
Okay.
And I've met
Can you talk a little bit about those? Because I'm so interested in those.
Yeah. So the first one I went to was the Business of Barbecue. And that was when I met, you know, Amy and Mike for the first time. And I'd already, you know, I kind of known what Mike had been doing for many years, but it was kind of similar to how we cook in the Southeast like that. And So I got to
So
go
that
to
was
that.
just so people that don't know, it's 17th Street Barbecue, Murfreesboro, Illinois. Okay.
Absolutely. Mike and Amy Mills and the whole crew there at 17th Street, they put on a really good production there, and they've got a lot of cool stuff that they do. They teach you kind of the ins and outs of things. They've got a really cool setup. If you want to set up a restaurant, they have, a couple different things you could look at, and they kind of take you through the whole restaurant side of things. And I went through the catering class as well, and I did the whole hog, and that's where I met, for the first time, I had met Sam and Pat and Wayne, Adam Perry Lang. All those guys were there for that class that I went to. John Lewis, all those guys were there for the first time.
Right there, that see, that's amazing. Like Sam Jones, Pat
Oh
Martin,
yeah, it was really
Wayne
cool. The
Mueller.
direct class APL sat right next to me. It was really cool just to get to sit and kind of chat with him the whole time throughout the class. Listening to all the other instructors, I could, sorry, instructors. They're all pit masters, but they kind of were instructing, kind of going through the process and
Oh,
everything.
without a doubt.
And it was really cool getting to see that side of it for people that have never really. It kind of just added some more pieces to my toolbox. I generally knew how most of those guys cook, but just getting to see the hows and whys of what they did, it was really cool to see them break down the stuff. And it was kind of cool watching Sam and those guys break hogs down, because it's exactly what I grew up with. And it was really cool seeing somebody that has kind of built a legacy in the Carolinas doing whole hog cooking like that.
Wow, that's invaluable. I've often people have often asked which class to take, and they're usually the first people that I talk about, because that's something. What's the odds like of you actually meeting them? You might see them at a competition, or not a competition, but like at an event or something like the Texas Monthly Barbecue Festival that just passed. A number of them were there, but that's invaluable. That's amazing.
Oh, definitely. And that was really kind of the foundation for me to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to do the whole barbecue, like food truck type thing. So, and then in 2013, I started really going forward with it. And then I had the trailer, and then I started working on the cook trailer, my twins, in 2015 is when I started. It was kind of like at the end, because when I was talking to John Lewis at the that one event, I was showing him the cookers I was building, because I told him I had never really had any kind of idea. I knew what I wanted, but I didn't know exactly what I was going to do. And I figured it out how to build these cookers, and I kind of just started building my own thing. And I showed him the pictures, and he said, "That's crazy that you were able to get it nailed down like that." And then his right-hand man, Philip, we got to become friends, and just chatting with him, and it was really cool. Just that whole experience was something that I would, like you said earlier, it's kind of invaluable. You learn a lot of things, and you just meet a lot of cool people that are like-minded individuals, and it kind of just springs you forward with that passion again.
Was John Lewis at Law Barbecue at the time, or had he already moved to Charleston?
He was transitioning at the time. He was on the tail end of things, and he was getting ready to do his restaurant in Charleston. He hadn't even I don't even think he had broken ground on it yet. I think he was just getting started with I think they cleared the lot, but I don't think
Wow.
they actually started the actual foundation for it yet. So,
And
and that's
his family makes, they make smokers too, right?
yeah, the Austin Smoker guys. And I don't know if they're still, I think they might be on the tail end of it. I think Senior and Jimbo might be on the tail end
I think you
of,
might be right.
yeah, I think that Amy and Mike got the last 500 mobile that they built. I want to say maybe, because I don't know. I don't think they're going to be producing them much longer, if not, unless they're done with the run already. So they very
Gotcha.
well could be.
So
And that kind of,
did you wait, but you got to jump back. Do you know how to weld? Is that?
oh yeah. Well,
Wow. You're like the Renaissance man up in Montana.
what's funny is maybe I don't know how to weld great, but my father, he had all kinds of things laying around, and my brothers are way better welders than I am. So we kind of just played around when we were growing up, and we had odds and end projects laying around, and so we were just trying to figure things out. And that's kind of how my mind works. It's really busy, and if I can't, I try to figure things out. If it's something that I'm really interested in, I'll figure out every which way it works, and then I'll break it down and then try to put it back together and make it work. And I try to work on things and build things that are just going to be, I don't know, it's practical. The practicality part of it is what a lot of people don't think about, especially when you're building cookers, because you're in and out of that thing. It becomes a part of you. So every single day you're in and out of it. So if there's certain little idiosyncrasies that you don't like, they've just become a pain in the butt after a while.
Oh
So I
yeah.
try things that are just practical.
Yeah. So those were, so at that time when you showed John Lewis, they were two 500s. It was a twin 500s.
Yeah, so originally, I had just one 500, and I had a friend here that I worked with years ago, and he got out of the Air Force and then worked at a place here locally, and it ended up being, it's kind of a weird story. He ended up working at this Northwest Energy place, it was called, and I called one day and I said, "Hey, do you guys have any decommissioned tanks? Because out here there's thousands of them. You can find them anywhere, and you can find them super old." But so I just called out of the blue. I called and said, "Hey, do you have any tanks?" And they said, "No, but I'll leave a message for this guy." So he called me back and he said, "Hey, man, what are you calling asking about tanks for?" And then turns out we worked together and I said, "Hey, what do you have?" And he said, "I got a field full of tanks over here. You want to come look at them?" I said, "Sure." So I went over there and he did literally have a field full of tanks, thousands, 500s, 325s. So anyway, I picked out one of them and I said, "You know what? I'll take this one and a 250. And I started with that. And then I said, "You know what? I want to build a second one. I think it would be cool to put two and two together." So at that time, Aaron had just done a dual 500. So I said, "Shoot, it's kind of weird because now everybody thinks I'm going to copy him." But I said, "You know what? Mine's going to look different than his anyway." So that's kind of how the 500s came apart, came down, because I changed my mind 100 times. I said, "Maybe I'll do a mobile 1000. Maybe I'll do just one 500 mobile." But I knew it had to be mobile because I wanted to be able to take it somewhere, because I didn't have a brick and mortar restaurant. So I didn't want to be limited to an area.
Were you looking online for ways to do it? Like, how did you know the science behind, or did you just figure airflow and then just play
so
with it?
So I've always been a fire bug. So the theory behind fire is you need to get it in and get it out. And there's a lot of vacuum and pressure and thermodynamics that go into it. So I kind of knew it's just being able to figure out what's going to work best for the cooker. Designing the cooker and understanding what you want the cooker to do is really where people get in the gray. They don't really understand sometimes this cooker is capable of doing. So, as far as the cooker design goes, I didn't really have any kind of formal way of going about it. I knew what I wanted it to do, and I knew how draw worked, and I knew how I wanted it to cook. And so I kind of just looked at, you know, what people were doing online, as far as, you know, you would see pictures every now and again of what John and those guys were doing, and the guys over at MillScale, mm-hmm. At the time they were building for the stuff that was over at Franklin's. And so I kind of took what they were doing, and I said, "You know what? I don't know exactly how they're going to do it, but you figure it out." And it was a painstaking ordeal to figure out how to mate those tanks together for the first time. It's kind of challenging.
Do you remember the first cooks on those guys?
Yeah, I did. I want to say the first big cook I did on them, I did briskets and pork butts in them after I'd already kind of seasoned them. I brought them home and seasoned them for about a week straight. I just kept, loading them up with just, I put tallow. I rubbed it down with tallow or whatever I had at the time. And then I just kept burning them in. And then the briskets and, the pork butts is the first big cook I ever did on them.
How'd they turn out?
Oh, they turned out really good, actually. I kind of knew what they were going to do, because within the first 10 minutes of lighting a fire, after I could see what the draw was doing, I knew that I had probably gotten it right. And after that, you know, it's once you figure out how to get the draw right, then you're golden. But that's the hardest part of all.
Was 2013 when you first started cooking for the public, or was it the 14, 15?
No, I want to say it wasn't until about 2015 is really when I started going out and doing pop-ups and stuff like that. And it's very small scale. I do it when I can because I have a full-time job too. So it was kind of just what I was doing on the weekends, or if it was a special event downtown or whatever. And that's kind of how I met Saul from the Law Barbecue side of things. He was on the tail end of that, and then he left. And then, I just messaged him one afternoon, and then we kind of just started talking. And at that time, he was not even at La Barbecue anymore. He was in the transitional period of trying to start doing the 2M stuff. And so that's kind of how that whole thing came to fruition. And that's kind of what pushed me even harder to do what I'm doing today.
What was encouragement from Saul?
Well, that, and he's a like-minded individual. He and I have a lot of our thought process kind of works kind of the same. We kind of piggyback off each other and drive each other. He's probably one of the most passionate people I've ever met about barbecue. And what I love about that is anytime we work together, we push each other so hard. It just makes everything, I don't know. It doesn't even seem like it's working at all when we work together. So it's really cool.
So they do go down and help him with 2M?
I went down after they first opened and went down there and kind of stodged there for about 2 weeks. And I've done it kind of periodically throughout the last few years. So
can you talk a little bit about 2M? Because I want people to know, people that might not know, which I'd be sad if they didn't know. But could you talk a little bit about 2M?
Yeah. So they got started. Well, Joe and SOO decided they wanted to open that place. And they did everything all on their own, and it was something kind of monumental, at least for me, being able to see all that come full force. Because in the beginning, they were doing the pop-ups, and they had, you know, they were doing as many pop-ups as they could do, and then it just kind of ran out. And then they said, okay, we have to make a decision about doing something else, or maybe trying to find some stability somewhere. And then they ended up getting that place that they rented from their landlord, which is right down the street from the mattress store, the guy that owns the property or whatever.
This is in San Antonio, for those that don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. In San Antonio.
Yeah.
And, they decided to just go with it. And that's why I find them so awesome, is because they just said, we have a dream and we're just going to roll into it and we're going to do whatever it takes to make it happen. And so that makes somebody that's kind of on the fence. There's a lot of things that go into it, and for maybe some people it's scary, but then if you don't feel like you have anything to lose, then why not just go for it? Because you'll live in regret not going for it. And
without a doubt. They went
for it, and it's just one of the most awesome places that people either know about or they don't know about, but eventually they're all going to know about it, because you know that food scene in San Antonio is growing, and they're kind of on the spear tip of that whole thing, especially the barbecue revolution in San Antonio for sure.
And what were you doing there? What did you get?
So I would just help him with whatever, whether it be managing the fire, trimming briskets, trimming ribs, making sausage. These are all things that I had been doing for quite a while. So just learning what they were doing, the way they do things there, just kind of figuring out how he wanted things, and then make sure that I was keeping to the integrity of what he was trying to do at 2M. So it was kind of unique, because we cooked kind of similar, but then learning, you know, how he does things is always really great, because we had completely different styles on how certain things are done, but for the most part, we were kind of in the same ballpark. But, you know, like I said, it was kind of whatever they needed at the time, because I was just wanting to make sure that they got up and running as fast as possible. And they were already building the momentum. And like I said, it was in January. They opened in December, and that was in January of, 2016 mm-hmm. is when mm-hmm. I went for the first time. And so, and then I've been back several times since then, so.
Wow, that's great knowledge, and what a great thing to do, and what a great experience to have that in your back pocket, that you've done that, and that you know. Did you sleep in the pit room?
I did, actually. I've slept in there, and then I've slept kind of in numerous places, the back of my truck when I would drive there, and because you know at that time it was just the girls that worked inside. And then it was Joe and SOO. And then when I would go, that would be it, because Joe and SOO pretty much ran the cookhouse. And then during the day, they would do everything else. And so I would manage the fire while SOO trimmed or what he was, you know, during service, he would be inside actually cutting on the board for everybody while Joe would do whatever else needed to be done throughout the restaurant. Because at the time, they only had like 5 people working there. So they started out really small, and it's growing. But those early days, they'll test your might for sure. And I just feel – I'm just grateful to have been a part of that whole thing, to see what – kind of how it started and everything. So it's been really great. And that's – because that's how I met Evan too throughout the
– Evan Leroy?
Evan Leroy. Yeah. Evan and I are really good friends too. And it's really cool because during that same time, I went down there and cooked with him shortly after that, actually.
Where was he working at the time?
He wasn't working anywhere. He was getting ready to start Leroy and Lewis, and I went down for he used to do like these little classes or whatever. So I hit him up, and then I went over, and he actually we sat at his house and cooked food all afternoon, and then just basically had conversation the whole day, and that's how we became friends. And then so every now and again he invites me out, and I'll go down there and cook with him. I got to go down. He came actually. He's been to Montana a couple times to cook over this really cool ranch that we have here. And this last year, he invited me over, and I got to cook with him and Wayne Miller. And it was really kind of one of those monumental events. I don't really even know how to explain it. I still kind of stand in awe sometimes just to see if that's actually real, because getting to cook, I spent a whole day just with Wayne, and it was kind of one of those things. I don't know. I'm very grateful to have met and been able to cook with some of these people is just kind of mind-blowing.
And what was that? Was that at that resort or was that?
Yeah, it's called the Paws Up Ranch. Yeah. It's over close to Missoula, Montana, which it's about 2 hours, 2.5 hours from where I live. But so Evan and I had been talking. And I said, yo, if you ever come back out here, let me know, because nobody has any kind of – they do barbecue classes, but they don't have traditional Texas-style barbecue stuff. I said, just let me know. You know I've got everything. And so he got a hold of me and said, hey, could you bring the twins out? I said, absolutely. I had the post oak, the cookers and everything. So we did the beef cheeks and everything there, and then we did the beef ribs and the brisket the last time here, which was just this last spring. So, well, I say spring, I think that was June, July timeframe.
I just saw something for, it's a resort at Paws Up, and I saw that Charlie McKenna from Lily's Q was out there.
Yes.
And it seems like it's starting to, I don't know if that was the beginning of the momentum, the connection to barbecue with them too. I don't.
Well, so they've kind of always tried to bring people out there. What's funny is Charlie's been out there a few times already, and he's coming back out. He was just here for Thanksgiving. He did a big Thanksgiving dinner out there. And so next year, they actually invited me back with Charlie and Wayne, Peg Leg Porker, which is Carrie Pringle. He's going to be there. There's a whole group of people that are going to be there, but we're going to be doing it. It's called Montana Grill Masters, so they invited me back to cook for that. So I'm pretty excited about that, but that's in next May. So
next May, 2019.
2019, yeah.
It depends on when you're listening to this or watching this.
That's true.
It could be if you're watching this now, you could be 2021. I guess. Yes. You missed it if it's that. So that knowledge that you got from Esaul and Evan, did you take that back and were you cooking for the public then at that time too?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I always have been trying to refine, but being able to work with those guys, it's kind of hard to explain because there's a different level. Like when I'm here cooking by myself, because when I run the food truck, it's just me. So I have a couple of guys that have helped me throughout the years. They'll help me. I'll have one guy that garnishes and one guy that runs the till for me. But everything else, whether it be the cooking process, the prep and everything else, that's all me. I do all of that by myself. So it gets kind of hectic. Yeah. But what that stuff has taught me is how to dial in and do the really better with time management and trying to figure out how to get things ready at a certain time. So those are all great skills that I've just learned, and they've kept me kind of sharp. I guess you can say that. They keep me really sharp on how to maintain things.
Wow. Well, who else have you cooked with?
So I did the brisket class at Texas A&M. I've done just about every kind of educational type class out there. So that's the one with
Aaron. What is that like? Because that one looks killer. And that really, it's really hard to get into, right?
It is. I don't even know how lucky I don't really, the year that I decided to go, the year before I had met Robert Jacob Lerma and I had talked about going, and he said, dude, you got to just come out and try it sometime. Cause at the time, I think that same year he got voted in as the president for it. And I said, I'm going to try to come out. But that year they implemented that lottery system.
Yeah.
So it was very random. I got selected for it. But that year was when that's where I met Arnis for the first time, because he had not even opened the big Eddie Mays yet. It was just, they were still in the trailer at the time. But that's where, Wayne was there. It was funny because I had just done the Murfreesboro thing, and that's where I met Wayne for the first time. And then he came to the Texas A&M for the Brisket 101 or whatever it's called. I think it's just the brisket class or whatever. Sure. But he was there for that. And so it was kind of cool because they were there within like 2 or 3 weeks of each other. So it was really cool. It was almost like I just had saw him like the week prior. But yeah, that one is kind of a unique class because they just kind of break down the anatomy of – you know, all things brisket, and they cook all several different types of briskets, whether, you know, it be a select all the way up to a Wagyu. And they kind of teach you a lot of the anatomy, and then Aaron will spend however long trimming a brisket or whatever. And then Jess will speak, or Jess Prowse, for those that don't know. Mm-hmm. She did some talking there. She was very interesting to listen to. She's very passionate about that stuff. And so Barbecue Snob was there. Well, Daniel Vaughn, anyway.
I think Daniel Vaughn, yeah. I think we've heard of him, right?
Yeah, he was there. It's the who's who, and it was really cool because I got to connect with a lot of people. And there were some people there that really just were there to they weren't trying to open restaurants or learn how to cook brisket. They were just there because they were curious about what they did there. But it was really cool because
well, I'd like to go, and I don't have any plans of opening a restaurant necessarily.
Oh, but it's just great to see that sort of thing, because they bring it out and tear it all down. And what better place to do beef anatomy than in Texas A&M, for goodness sake.
Sure.
Dr. Sable and those guys kill it over there. Their interns, it was some of the most professional learning that I've ever been to, just from the beginning to the end. They were really good about everything. And I don't know, it's very in-depth, and you can get into the weeds as much as you want, but it was a really great learning experience, especially at the anatomy of just beef and briskets, like centric. It was really awesome.
So when you met Arnis there, did you go cook with Arnis?
No, I haven't actually went and cooked with Arnis. I had just briefly chatted with him there, and then I had just drove back from Texas Monthly, and then he was busy the day I was in there, and so I didn't get to really chat with him because he was in the back talking with some customers. So I didn't really get to spend a whole lot. Plus, I was in transit, so I didn't have a whole lot of time to BS at the time. But maybe someday I can go out there. I mean, I don't know. He cooks on reverse flow, so I've never cooked on a reverse flow. I'm sure, you know, I can figure it out. But it's kind of they have a unique way of cooking over there. But he's definitely
and the ones that the smokers he builds with his company, are they all reverse flow?
Yes, he does have kind of a unique little hybrid that. They showed me while I was there. It's kind of like a reverse flow / like grill type thing.
Oh,
it's kind of a unique little cooker. It's like a home cooker or whatever. But yeah, everything they cook on, they've got that giant oiler that they do ribs on, I believe. And then everything else is all on the offsets or reverse flow offsets that they have.
Have you been to their new location?
Oh yeah.
It's not new anymore, but semi. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been there a couple times. Yeah. The first time I drove out, let's see, it's been like two, it was right after they opened it. I went out there because I had to drive almost through there on my way down to Texas.
Okay.
So when I cross over the state line, when you get into Texas, they're kind of in a unique spot over there in the northwest side of Texas, I guess.
And that's a place that people should visit. They should. I've only heard amazing things.
Yeah, if you can get over there, that's the difficult part. A lot of people don't want to travel that far, but for me, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, granted, I live in Montana, and I'm not going to just drive there to eat. But if I'm going that way, I'm definitely going to stop. But usually when I drive to work, it's 3 hours one way. So a lot of times I spend three to 6 hours, depending on where we go each day. So driving, I really got over that really quick here in Montana, because we're right in the middle of the state. So you got to drive 3 hours no matter where you go here.
Oh, and if you're in Los Angeles, to get anywhere is 2 hours, 3 hours.
That's 10 miles away in Los Angeles.
Exactly. Yeah. I just want to go over to the hill.
When I went out to visit Andrew and Michelle this past January, I said, how in the world do you guys do this with the traffic? I've been in all the big cities now, except for New York. And Los Angeles, it's tough with that traffic. But you know what? I have to give them credit. They love it. Everybody that lives in Los Angeles loves it with the traffic. And I guess because I didn't grow up there like that, I just can't imagine. I mean, 8 miles away, and it's going to take you 2 hours to get there sometimes, depending on where you go. Because I was kind of got stuck in traffic for – I went to Howlin' Rays when I was there. And and so I got stuck there that morning. I went there to eat at like maybe 9. But I didn't know. So at the time, there was like this march thing going on. It was back in January. Like they had that women's march going on. Mm-hmm. And I got stuck there. And I had to get over like, I think it was only 3 miles away to get to Andrew and Michelle's pop-up that they were doing.
Uh-huh.
And it took me like an hour and a half to get over there. It blew my mind.
And for people that know, it's Andrew and Michelle from Moose Craft Barbecue. And they're, it's amazing how bad the traffic. That's why you can tell that like Elon Musk wants to build all these tunnels, because it's just.
Sure.
It doesn't, it almost doesn't.
LA could benefit from that for sure, because it's so congested and everything's growing so much bigger. And when these were originally built and the cities were built this way, they weren't built to handle this capacity of people. So they're almost maxed out, at least in my opinion. It looks like it's getting to the point where they can't really go any further.
And we have highways that are 5 lanes each side, and they're maxed out. Yeah,
Pro 5, test your might, for sure.
Well, but it's like, and it's like so like cliche to like talk about traffic in LA, but it really is getting worse. It's getting really bad.
Oh, you know, and I told Andrew, I said, man, next time I come out there, it's not even worth getting, you know, any kind of like Uber or Lyft or anything, because no matter what, you're still going to be stuck in traffic. Mm-hmm. So
you want to be at least like you can go side roads with take Waze and you can see the city. And it's a beautiful city. I've gotten to know it a lot better just because of Waze, but it's kind of sad. But it's interesting that and it's funny too, because I'd always wanted to talk to you. And then Andrew kept saying, you got to talk to Sheldon. You got to talk to Sheldon. So part of the reason why I even wanted to talk more to you was because of Moose Craft Barbecue.
Yeah, they're doing some really cool stuff out there, and it's kind of cool because they're kind of in the the beginning phases of the revolution that's happening in LA. And it's kind of, it's about time that California is starting to move up, because most of the stuff that, that I've cooked from California style is all direct fired, grilled, ribs, everything. And brisket didn't really exist. It was all tri-tip. And so the kind of stuff that I was doing was all, you know, Santa Maria style, which is all tri-tip over open pit grills, over red oak coals. And that's, that stuff definitely has its place. And I love that kind of traditional Santa Maria style barbecue.
Yeah, it's, when it's done right, it's fantastic.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's definitely unbelievable. And the simplicity of it is what just makes it even better. But that's just like most your Central Texas style barbecue. The simplicity of it is what's made it so great. And people try to overthink it sometimes. And it, you just get right back to the roots of what it started at. So it's really cool that they're kind of there in the beginning phases. I mean, there's a lot of people doing it. And honestly, the California scene within the next 5 to 6 years, who knows where we're going to be at with that, because I don't know, unless they get really strict on restaurant laws. And I don't know. I don't know how Bert's doing it yet now, because I haven't seen his new restaurant, which I saw some of the stuff from the other day. I don't know how the back of it is, and I don't know how they're going to really accept the kind of offset cookers.
Yeah, Bert at Slab, which just opened this time. It was what, November 22nd or something. He's not using his offset there. He has to use a rotisserie because of the laws, and especially where he is on Third Street. There's restaurant after restaurant after store. It's pretty.
It looked like a smaller area, or a kind of like a little outlet kind. I don't know. I don't really know what they call it.
Been texting Andrew and Michelle and myself photos as he's been testing this for the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, and he's trying his best to replicate what he had in the offset. And he's doing a really good job. I tried it, but it's not easy.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like it was going to be pandemonium, because I'm sure there was a lot of people hyped up and ready for that to open finally.
Yeah.
Which is cool, because I like any of that stuff that's happening. I think it's really cool when the whole Central Texas type thing starts branching out. It's really cool seeing in some of these other cities that this Central Texas style barbecue is really
amazing, isn't it? Yeah, like
it's a testament to the state and the history behind what barbecue was, and how it's just kind of it's evolved into something I never thought it was going to be. It's mind blowing to me to see where barbecue is, because 10 years ago, I would have never thought that barbecue was going to be where it is today. I mean, I've always been a fan, but I never knew it was going to be. It's almost like going to rock concerts sometimes when you go to these places. You see people that, wow, I just saw this guy on this video, and oh my gosh, look, I mean, this guy's famous. He's one of the best pit masters in the state, and it's really cool just being able to do that.
Well, it's funny too, because I'll tell my friends that aren't as passionate or into barbecue as I am that I just talked to blah blah blah, and they'll I'm out of body sometimes talking to these people. Like I'm talking next week to Rodney Scott, and I am like, that is like, I just can't believe it. Like, but like my friends James would be like,
winner.
What's that?
I said, just coming off that James Beard Award is, I mean, for barbecue is just monumental for everybody involved with barbecue, because that just goes to show you, it's not just something that people just throw together. There's artwork and craft behind it.
Yeah. And Rodney just is a great person. And it's like these people and a lot of these guys that you're dealing with and I deal with, they're some of the best people that I've ever met in my life.
Oh yeah. It's crazy when most of us get together. Anytime it's, you know, any of us, it's kind of like when I just came back from Texas Monthly and getting to see everybody there, it's like going for like homecoming, getting to see Leonard, getting to see Dylan, getting to see Lane, all those guys, Reed from Guess, all those people just running into everybody, Clay. And it's crazy because you're trying to get work done, but then every time you turn, there's somebody else coming to talk with you. And it's just, I don't know.
It's really neat.
I have to step back sometimes and pinch myself, because it's just mind blowing that I've been presented a lot of these opportunities. And it's just, I don't know. I love each day of it that I can be more and more involved with it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, for sure. It's funny. A lot of people I've said that I'm going to be talking to you, and they're like, oh yeah, I love talking to you. He's such a great guy. Like, cause we've only just communicated online. We've never.
Right.
What's the future hold for you? What's coming up?
I can retire, this next year. So May or June, I'm probably going to relocate to Texas and kind of see what happens there. I'm working on a cooker right now. I've got 1,000 gallon that I'm building. And for most people, they probably can guess where it's going to go. But it's going to end up going to 2M. It'll be probably maybe one. Maybe I'll build another one some other time. I don't know. I just don't really have the time to do it. It took me almost a year to do the twins. I just really don't have the time. Yeah. So, and I build other stuff too. I built some really cool grills and stuff that I just like really fooling around with here at the house. Yeah. So after I'm done with that and then I retire, it's probably going to be Central Texas somewhere. And then,
do you think I'm a restaurant?
I don't know that I'm going to do that. I'm probably just going to go work in the business. Maybe find some places that I want to go work at and see how that works. I just want to be involved with Texas barbecue. Just it's always been a dream of mine just to cook in the Texas barbecue business and to just really be a part of that community like full time is really what I want to do.
Well, that's great. You don't have to open a restaurant to do that. You can work lots of places.
Absolutely. Dylan did that stuff too. He's kind of just like the traveling pitmaster. He kind of goes around and works with everybody. But that to me is kind of really cool that you can go out and work with all these different types of people. But at some point, you just got to reel it back in and figure out what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think for me, I'm just going to go and do wherever the wind carries me. To be honest with you,
that's great. So, but who knows? Maybe after 4 or 5 years, you might say, you know, I want to, or maybe open up something small or just do some. You know, maybe do catering there too. Who knows?
I mean, it's the sky's the limit, really. You can get and do everything you want to do over there. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to kind of see where I'm at in 2 years. I'm not going to change the way that my drive is. I definitely want to be a part of it. And just being over there, I'm really excited about being over there and being able to just see and visit with everybody. And be able to just be able to cook great barbecue is really what it's all about.
And live probably closer to everything.
Oh, yeah. And you know what's crazy is when I go over there to visit, I end up going to all these different places anyway. So actually being there and trying to get to all these places once I live there would be a lot easier than trying to cram a bunch of stuff in because I try to go and visit everybody when I go.
Yeah,
sometimes it's almost impossible because you got to go to Houston, you got to go to Dallas. And so you got to jump around everywhere. So
yeah. No, I'm actually like in my head, I can't even figure out where I want, like when I do visit because of this and because I've met so many people and want to visit so many people. Yeah. It's almost like you're going to make some people upset.
Yeah. You got to come yourself. Up with a real good short list and kind of stick with it because I mean, I don't know when Ian and I go, Ian and I and Joe, we usually go on big barbecue crawls when I come down there and, we'll just make a short list and we'll say, okay, we're going to go here and then just kind of just drive and then, wherever we end up, we want to make sure we go visit the people that we want to go see and then just kind of see everything in between.
What's your hat make cornbread, not war? Where do you get that?
You know, what's funny is I have a lot of questions about this hat. This hat is super old, but since I'm from Alabama, there's a company called Billy Reed. He's like a well-known clothing designer, but he's from Alabama. And so I remember when I was leaving, he was getting really, really big and being from Florence. And when he came out with his hat, I have a shirt that's with it too, but I couldn't tell you where it's at. It's probably destroyed at this point. This hat has been with me since the beginning, so it's super seasoned now. It probably smells like a lit log on most days. It's what I cook in most of the time.
Okay.
So anytime I go to Texas, I take this hat with me. And everybody, even when I went to Howlin' Ray's for the first time, Johnny, when I walked in, he saw that hat and he made a point to talk with me, which that place is just mind blowing. It's still to me the and I've had every type of hot chicken on from Nashville across the United States. By far, Howlin' Ray's is knocking it out of the park. But he made a point to say, hey, come here, let me ask you about that hat. And then we did. It was kind of weird because he said, hey, let me show you how we do cornbread in L.A. And he pulled out like this giant piece of cornbread and like broke it in half. And we dunked it in some collard greens and we kind of like cheers to it. And he's like, this is how we do cornbread here in L.A. And I said, man, that was pretty awesome. But I'd been in line since like 9:00 and that was like at 2:00 in the afternoon. Once you get in there, the whole vibe is that place is just it's a modern marvel to see actually what goes through that place. The production, everything about it is just phenomenal.
Yeah, if you come to Los Angeles, you must visit Howlin' Ray's. It's in Chinatown, and what's nice too, if you follow them, if you're on social media, follow them on Twitter. If you tweet them, they'll tell you it's a half an hour, 45 minutes. Generally, it's 2 hour wait, but there are times of day, and they're open later in the day now. So if you go later in the day, you could probably not wait as long, but it's
I want to say when I was there, they had just started doing either a Tuesday or Wednesday. The last time I went, I actually met Andrew there. I was leaving on my way out and it was like an hour and a half out of the way. I drove an hour and a half out of the way just to go there and eat again. And then Andrew met me for lunch because I said, I have to have this one more time because I didn't order enough the first time. I got a sando and I think I got like a couple of wings or whatever. And I mean, you've been in line all day. I wasn't sure what to expect. I said, man, I can't believe I'm waiting in line this long for chicken. And I've waited in line for barbecue for plenty of time, but I'd never waited for hot chicken. And it was worth every wait. I tell anybody that's going to that area, if you don't go, you're doing yourself a disservice mm-hmm. because everything about that place is just phenomenal. How it's ran, how the vibe is. It's just a great place to go.
Yeah, it's like the way it's an open kitchen, like it's almost like a sushi bar, so you get to see that. But it's the hot Nashville hot chicken sandwich. People don't understand, like, and I didn't even understand how good it can be and how satisfying it can be. And it's funny because last night I saw on the Cooking Channel, Best Thing I Ever Ate, and they were talking about that was the, I think the batter's box where you get a number of different items. It's like a big, it just made me so hungry. It made me so sad that I wasn't there watching it.
Right. Yeah. There's just so many places doing really cool things. And what's crazy is the food scene in LA is so broad mm-hmm. that it's kind of hard to pick one thing. But I said, you know what? I'm going to Howlin' Rays because I've been following them since they were in the food truck. And I said, I have to have this stuff. I've been watching this way too long just to not try it. And so I made a point. And what's crazy is I went on a Saturday, which is the waffle day. And the line was just stupid. When I got there at 9 a.m. and they didn't open till 11, I believe, or something like that. But they're already out the front where, you know, when you come in from the one side where the parking's around the corner right there, it was already out the door all the way. And they burn through the line as fast as they can. They kill it. And so I honestly didn't have anything better going on that day mm-hmm. other than going to that pop up. That's what I went to L.A. for was for Moosecraft barbecue that day for their pop up. And so yeah, it was not a big deal to wait. I don't know. I'll wait in line for good food. Anybody that knows me or anybody that enjoys good food will go wait in line for it. It's just the way it is.
You just got to do it. You got to do it. It's something.
You got to do it because, I mean, if there's a line, then there's a reason why there's a line. Mm-hmm. Because especially with the service, the food, the quality, everything they're doing there is just a home run. Mm-hmm. And their crew is it's one of those just tight-knit crews. It's just mind-blowing that you can have everybody that has that buy-in of that dream. And when you have people that are that passionate, I mean, you can't ask for a better work environment, and that's all you can hope for is, and that's why I love working with all these people in Texas. It's the same thing. Like-minded individuals that feel mm-hmm. that passion. It's just, there's so many great ideas and so many things that are just explosive when you work with people like that. And that's what I love about just barbecue and food. Food brings everybody together. So it's just great.
Without a doubt. And it's people like Amanda and Johnny at Howlin' Rays or Andrew and Michelle at Moosecraft Barbecue or Arnis and Mallory or Leonard or Isaul or all these, like you can tell that not only are they passionate about what they do, but they want to lift other people up too. And they want to give an amazing experience. And with that experience, they're also trying to end up better people. You can just feel a difference. Than just someone just slapping together like a burger shop and just saying like, I just want to make some money, which, you know, good. Like they can do that. People can do that too.
You know, and I'm, like I said earlier, I'm just very grateful that those guys let me come in because it's one of those things where you don't really want to let other people into it sometimes because mm-hmm. you don't really know their intentions. And for me being an outsider, somebody that lives thousands of miles away, for them to let me come in and just be a part of that and be friendly and just become, I don't know, everybody that I'm friends with now in Texas, it's a family now. Mm-hmm. And it's really, I don't know. I have to just stand back in awe sometimes because it just blows my mind that I'm a part of this, but I live so far away. But it's just great to see these guys grow. Everybody, seeing them from the beginning to where everybody is at now, is just mind blowing to me. Everybody's doing so well. Mm-hmm. It's just great.
And that's what makes me so happy to talk to you because you're so passionate, you're so knowledgeable, and that's why they love you, and that's why they're friends with you because of your passion and the integrity and the person that you are. And I think it's going to be exciting for people to follow your career because it'll be interesting to see like what you're doing and because I'm sure, and also in your road is not going to necessarily go the road that you think. It'll probably jive. It'll be interesting. It'll be really, I don't know the proper term. It's a little early.
Yeah. I mean, long who knows? It's great because after I'm done with this job here in Montana, it's kind of like an open book. I can kind of go and do what I want to do, but I know what I'm going to do, and I'm just going to let the breeze blow me wherever it's going to blow me. And I'm really excited about where I land because as long as I'm in some sort of cooking capacity where I can cook and just be around people that enjoy cooking, I think that's what's really going to be what's really going to keep me going. Yeah. I don't know. we'll see what happens in the next 2 years. I think in the next 2 years, I'll really get it dialed in what I'm going to end up doing. But, you know, I've met some great, great, great people down the road, and it's really awesome.
Well, that's awesome. Well, Sheldon, well, thank you so much for taking the time. And I know that people are going to dig this, and I'm sure that after this, you'll probably get a lot of people reaching out to you, because it's just this was great, a great talk, and I'm sorry it's taken so long to get this together, but I'm so glad.
That's no problem. It's great to finally sit down and get to chat with you, because I know we've been talking about it for quite a while, and you know it's really awesome. I really appreciate you reaching out to me. I love just chat. I can chat about music, barbecue, cast iron, coffee. We didn't even touch on some of the other stuff I'm involved with, but that's okay.
Well, we could do a part two, and also too. I can't wait to hang out with you next time you're in LA, or next time I'm in Texas. We'll try to coordinate. I would love to go eat some food and drink some beers and hang out.
Absolutely, that would definitely be awesome.
And get some coffee too.
Yeah, that's kind of another. That's a whole another rabbit hole right there for me too. So, and it's funny this morning because. Dusty Miller over.
I was going to ask you, have you been to Miller's Smokehouse?
Well, no. So I've kind of been with those guys since they started their coffee journey too. And it's funny because I was just chatting with Dusty a few weeks ago, and he sent me some of his new. He's kind of got that Inceptional place that he's building. He's working on right now, Penelope. Yeah. And he sent me some of their roasted beans that they're doing over there. And we were just chatting about it yesterday, sort of like with Amadeo too. We're all good buddies, and so it's funny. We chat so much about coffee. It's kind of like switched over from barbecue to coffee now, because those guys, they're doing it really cool though, because they have like the dream setup over there, and you know I've got a home setup, but they've kind of just went above and beyond, and now they're doing roasting, and that's a whole nother rabbit hole. I don't have time to get into, because I would love to do roasting, but on the other hand. It's just one more thing that I don't really have time for, but the stuff that he sent me is really great, and so they're going to do some other stuff too. Trying to think, he sent me some. It's a Guatemala that he sent me, but it's really good. And we were just chatting about it yesterday, and
that's so cool. Yeah, I love what they're doing. I love it.
It's great. Everything they're doing over there, and that's such a huge place. I don't know if you've ever been there, but
that's tough, because that's on my list. I need to go there.
Yeah, their original location was cool, but this place here is just unbelievable. How big it is, and it's awesome to where they've grown to, and now they've got this coffee bug. It's just great, because they're doing some really cool stuff over there, and. So we were talking about the coffee, and we never even spoke about, I only ground half of it, and then I let it rest for about 2 weeks. And then now we were talking about the different flavor profiles, because I said it tasted completely different, because I've been pulling shots with it the last couple of days, because I've been blending. It blends really well with eggnog. I do these crazy eggnog lattes all the time, and it blends really well with milk. So I don't know, 2 weeks is kind of the cool window for that one, but that's for another time. I can talk about coffee.
I would love to. Let's like in a couple of weeks. Let's talk. That would be an interesting, because that's and it's funny too, because I was talking to Dusty about how barbecue pairs really well with coffee.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Aaron did it right back in the day when he had the little coffee shop outside the corner, around the corner from where Franklin's is. Mm-hmm. He did it really right, and I don't know if that place is still there or not. Last time I went, I was just there chatting with Andrew, and. I don't even know if it's still back there. What's that?
I don't know if it is. I don't think it is.
I don't think it is either, because I haven't seen anything about it for a while. Yeah. But yeah, they were doing it right. It was kind of cool, because you could sit there in the morning, and it was great because you could get, you know, your espresso or whatever you wanted that morning while you were waiting in line. It was kind of a cool idea. Yeah. But yeah, we could talk all this other stuff. I don't know. I can get into the weeds when it comes to this stuff.
Sadly. But if you're passionate about it, that's why. Well, cool. We'll have a great weekend.
I really appreciate you reaching out. I really do.
Thank you so much. And yeah, enjoy your weekend. Yeah, it was great talking to you.
Thanks, brother. You too.
All right, thanks so much.